beneath a star so bright. Pull your hat down, make sure your cinch is tight. Horse is kinda snuffy, cold chill up your spine. You'll get your ass moving, sun will burn in daylight.
Howdy there, I'm Matt McKinley and we're burning daylight. Welcome to Burning Daylight, the only podcast for the working cowboy.
Well, howdy there, daylight burners. Welcome back to another fine episode of Burning Daylight. Got a good show lined up for you tonight. We got a special guest named TC Kenyon, and if I get the name of this podcast wrong, I'm going to feel like a real jackass. But I think it's called The Remnants. He just started it, and if I'm wrong, he can correct me here in just a second. But I listened to it. He had his first guest, first episode. First guest was Darren Little, a buddy of mine. I don't know Darren very well, but he's been on the show before. I've met him in Elko last year. Good guy, and I really enjoyed the episode. And they talked a lot. A lot of topics that I've covered on many different episodes here, and it's kind of a recurring theme in the cowboy world of just kind of how the world's changing around us, and while the ranching and cowboy business changes over time as well, there's still some very fundamental parts of it that just don't change regardless of the operation. And anyways, I really enjoyed his episode, and I reached out to him, and now I recommend you guys go listen to it if you're into that type of thing, and I know you are because you're listening to my show. And so we got him on. He's out of Saratoga, Wyoming, right now, or Elk Mountain, somewhere in that area, southern Wyoming. You've seen the signs on I-80 if you drove through there. Not a lot going on except wind and a few cows. So anyway, here's TC Kenyon, and it is The Remnants, isn't it?
It is The Remnants, yes, sir.
Boom.
So
all right.
Boom. There we got go. It.
I am a professional at this. I do try. I do try to be good at it.
Like I told my buddy the other day, I'm a professional beer drinker, but I'm an amateur podcaster. So yeah.
There you go. I don't even have the professional beer drinker anymore at this point. I went on a fitness kick, and so I've been kind of, I went 75 days no booze, and then I had my little time off for the holidays, and honestly, I just felt like shit when I got pretty drunk one night, but it was unlike most hangovers. It was just like, I just felt like shit. Like, I wasn't sick. I was functional. I just felt like, you know, my body was just like, what the fuck happened? What happened? So I cut way back, and so I'm not even the professional beer drinker anymore, but I'm still the amateur podcaster that, so
well,
anyways,
my wife and I, we went on our very first ever vacation for our 10-year wedding anniversary. We went to Vegas to the NFR this year.
Okay.
And there's something about living at 8,000 feet when you go down to Vegas that's at like 1,500 feet or something. They yeah. cannot give you enough Pendleton and Pepsi to get you drunk. But there's something about it. I tried my best to do it, and I could kind of take it or leave it ever since I went to Vegas. I think I ruined myself.
Yeah, you'll have that. I noticed that same thing. Because I went to school in Fort Collins, and oh, yeah. And you know, it's on the plains, but eastern Colorado is it's deceiving, because you know the lowest spot in Colorado is down by Holly, and it's still at 3,500 feet, and so I think Fort Collins is at like 58 or somewhere in there, and then we went down to I was south of Tucson for a wedding, and same thing. Like it was hot and a lower elevation. I think it was only around, I don't know what the elevation was, but it was way lower. And so between the elevation and then just sweating sweating it out immediately. It took forever. But once I finally did get a buzz, it was on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, those desert drunks are pretty, that's a pretty fun time.
It's different. It's different.
Yeah. Yeah. But you put that much booze in your body and you're bound to have a violent reaction, you know?
It'll come one way or another.
It will. But, anyway, congrats on the podcast. Have you recorded any more episodes, or you just got the one in the bag?
No, just the one with Darren so far. I've got another good friend of mine that's just up the road, and he runs like 4,000 yearlings in the summer. And we've here in the next week, we're going to do another one. I'm going to try to do one a week. And then
All right. The
real reason I started it was because – back in the day, I knew a guy. He was 92 years old. He lied when he was 16 years old, and he got into the army. He was in the Battle of Iwo Jima and got shot through the face and almost died and lived. And then went after he got back from war for a lifetime a cowboy in. And I always told my buddy, man, dude, we got to get that guy on a podcast. And he was a super cool guy. He's a good friend of ours, and he passed away. Well, and so I always was like, man, if I ever find another cool guy, an old timer, I got to get his story recorded. And there's a really cool guy just up the road from me, south of Rawlins, Wyoming, and he's in his mid-80s now. Well, he's like, when he was 14 years old, he ran across a couple guys that were old Mustangers from southern Wyoming that were still running horses and putting horses on the freaking train.
Oh, okay. Like,
old school guy. So he's got a bunch of cool stories. And I figured, like, right when I get this thing started, I got to get old Bruce on this podcast, because I think a lot of guys that enjoy old cowboy stories would really like the guy, you know.
Oh, yeah. So, no, don't delay on that, because I've had a couple guys pass away on me that I wanted to, and they're not people that I knew, but they're people I wanted to talk to. Like I wanted to talk to Larry McMurtry, you know, Lonesome Dove, man. Why wouldn't you want to talk to the guy that wrote Lonesome Dove? And and he died before I got a chance to reach out to him. On the same note, I had a couple people reach out to me to get Boots O'Neill on the show, and he returned my phone call, and now we're kind of buddies, you know. And like that's just something that's really I think those are the
guys. I mean, them stories need told. There's not going to be that many guys that grew up on the wagon or grew up running horses that are left here in another 5 years, you know. So
it's funny. I've got Boots' business card here that he wrote his number on.
what does Boots' business card say?
It says Boots O'Neill Brand Inspector for the 4/6 Burnett Ranches LTD.
Brand Inspector.
Yep.
That's an old card probably, isn't it?
Probably so. I'm not sure.
I think he was a brand inspector like quite a while ago.
He's been it for a while, but you know, a lot of those.
Oh, is he still one?
He technically still is.
I didn't know that.
I don't think he doesn't do much of it anymore. I don't think he does any of it anymore. But I think he's, and maybe he's not certified or whatnot anymore. But he was an inspector for a long time. He told me some pretty good brand inspection stories. He caught a couple of pig thieves one time, and
I'm sure.
When he was working, because he's a ranger too. I got to see his ranger badge.
He's a ranger.
Yeah, because he was he was commissioned with the Texas Rangers as a livestock detective.
Right. I remember hearing a story about. I'm sorry, man. I'm having.
Oh, it's all good.
I'm having, my phone is trying to not charge on me. There we go. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
My phone
it wasn't charging. Are you going to Elko for Cowboy Poetry by chance?
I wasn't playing. No, probably not. No.
Okay.
I wouldn't.
Well, anyways, we got our show going. It's officially on February 2nd and the 3rd at the Stage Door. We're raffling off a pair of spur straps, mustache ride made by Rachel Lynn Customs. Anyway, $20 for a spot. We still got a few spots. We're doing a deck of card drawing. That's for you and everybody out there listening. But $20 a spot gets you entered. 52 spots total. All the proceeds go to pay the artist for the show. So, anyways, if you want a spot, hit me up. And so that now that's out of the way. But we were talking before. We're in this. We're in the in the modern world, and I'm in that weird gap between Generation X and the millennials. I guess I'm technically classified as a millennial, but I'm on the I'm in that like tweener phase where so like I grew up with the internet, but as I like in the latter part of growing up, the internet came into play, and so like the internet really took off when I was like high school and college. And but then I'm still here friends with Boots O'Neill, who's getting ready to turn like 92 or three, I think.
Yeah, he probably don't even know how to run Google, you know.
No, he's got a flip phone and he's happy with that. And but he's a guy that still drove cattle to the railhead to ship them back in the day, and he was friends with guys that are new guys that probably were some of the really early cow punchers so we're as long and storied as this cowboy history of the United States is, it's really not that long in the grand scheme of things. We're like two people away from when it started. But in that time period, we also had the Industrial Revolution and then Technological Revolution. And now I was creating podcast cover art using AI today while I was writing pins. So it was like in between pins, I was like typing in what I wanted the AI to generate for an image. And there's like, it's a weird damn world that we live in.
I totally agree. And so I'm 30 and I believe that I am like one of the very last of like kids in town still played baseball and rode their bikes and got in fights and shit. And then the internet came about. And just like you said, you say you're on the tail end. I feel like I'm on the extreme tail end, but it's crazy to me. It's just like this guy I hope to get on here in a couple of weeks is he taught me sitting at his table one night how to back hobble a horse. And he said, "You know what back hobbling one is?" And I'm like, "What are you talking about? Like sidelining or hobbling back legs?" And no, it's not that at all. Them old school guys would like take a mare and a colt out. And they'd go put them out in a draw or something, and they'd back hobble these colts where they were like tied their front legs and then back over their back to another front leg tied off. And they'd take them hot mares that had just foaled, and they'd get to whinnying because they'd try to run off while the colts couldn't leave, and they'd draw them stud horses in. And then they'd wait till them stud horses were kind of jazzed up and starting to get a little bit more tired, and they'd run them down and rope them, that does not happen today. And here I'm sitting at a table, like we're on the internet right now talking from states away, and I can go 20 miles down the road and talk to a guy who like has back hobbled colts to rope wild horses out on the desert. And, and he learned from a guy who used to run horses for a living. I mean, it's crazy that the amount, how much the world has changed from like, it's changed nothing from like year zero to 1870. And yeah. then 1880 till now, it's just mind blowing what we've come to on the technology side of things. You know,
yeah, it's crazy because you had, you know, like the invention of the wheel, and then you had, you know, you had fire, the wheel, domestication of livestock, including, like, you know, breaking of horses was a huge technological advantage in the human race. And then, you know, bronze, iron, steel, all that. But on the livestock side, it was just like you domesticated the horse and livestock, and then you started breeding them, and not a whole lot changed until the whole technological revolution really took yes. hold. I mean, you know, like even throughout the industrial revolution, I mean, cattle were cattle. Like when Chicago was becoming the Chicago we know now, through the meatpacking industry, they were taking whatever cattle they could, you know? So if like nobody really wanted the Texas Longhorn to eat, but people wanted beef, and Texas had a lot of Longhorns, so they
right.
And then pretty soon they're like, hey, we can ship this refrigerated beef just about anywhere. Why don't we get some good cattle in here? So then they imported the Hereford and the Shorthorn and, yeah. and Angus, and then off we went. And we overtook Great Britain in the span of about 20 years as being like the cattle exporters of the world.
Yeah.
Or the beef exporters of the world anyways.
Yeah. Well, and like, if you really think about it, like, you know, up before the very late 1870s, early 1880s, like there weren't even cattle in the northern part of the country. You know, I mean, it was, that's not even, you know, 1870 to 1970 plus a little bit more, here we are. I mean, we're 100 and some years, but then before the light bulb and the train and the car and everything, I mean, when the white guys got to here, they were still riding around trying to kill shit with sticks and freaking arrows, you know?
Yeah.
And it was like that from the beginning of time. I mean, and then before they had horses come over with the Spaniards and whatever, they're doing it on foot. But then something happened right there in probably, you know, what I would consider 1880. It just flipped. And then here we are. We're trying to send rockets to Mars and have AI and drive Teslas, and it's freaking nuts. And then there's still guys out there trying to make a living a horseback. So, and here we are.
Well, it takes all of it, though. That's the crazy part of it. I mean, and that's so much that gets missed in this big urban-rural divide is, like, you know, we grow all the food and stuff for people, but they make all the shit in the cities that we use. So, you know, like it's a symbiotic relationship. Yeah. You know, to a certain extent we can survive on our own, but at some point you need the guys that pump the oil. You need the people that build all the stuff, which more often than not now that's a little Chinese slave that does that. But
I would argue that fact a little. Like I really think that, like, I mean, there's cattle in the eastern side of the United States, but really anything west of the Mississippi River, like, that's how we're sustainable, is from the western half of the United States, oil, cattle, corn, soybeans, whatever kind of agriculture shit. And then there's just like, and I guess everyone cusses California. There's still a lot of ag in California, but then you have like the California kind of out there. But
California as a state is beautiful. The government sucks, but it's also the number one ag state. It's not just some agriculture; it's the most agriculture in the country comes from California, and the most diverse kind of agriculture. I mean, anything from high desert ranching to coastal ranching to almonds, peaches, tomatoes, corn, wheat, oil, everything. I mean, it's Yeah, it really is like the land of plenty over there. But
at one time, it was like the cattleman's paradise, literally. Mm-hmm. You know, like at one point, it was where you wanted to run a cow. I mean, it was the perfect cow country. It's just that it was so nice that everybody else decided to move in as well.
That's how most of the good cow country is. Like you get like Missoula and Bozeman are getting overrun. You know, Steamboat Colorado, same way. Southern Colorado, you know, in like the Southern Rockies, same way. You know, like all those picturesque good cow country, like, they just get taken over. Particularly if they're close to another, you know, kind of urban center, which is that's the only thing that's kept Montana from getting completely out of hand is like there's nothing, there's still not a huge city out there.
Well, in the winters, like right now, right now it's supposed to be like 40 below in some of them freaking places here in the next couple of days. And like, that's the other part. When I first moved into this country right here in southern Wyoming, it's actually, it would be Chris Williams, who now runs the ZN, his brother. In my opinion, that guy's like the king of cowboys, at least in this country. He's cool. He's cowboy down to the core. And he kind of grew up in this country. And I remember we were at a ranch rodeo one time warming up our horses. And I'd heard about this job. And I rode up next to JD. And I said, JD, how is that country up there? You grew up there. And he just smiled. He says, well, I tell everybody it's 4 months of paradise and 8 months of winter. You know, and it's exactly right. You've never seen a better place to live like May, June, July, August, but man, you better like the cold. And I think that's the only reason that this place just ain't freaking overrun with Californians and
Wyoming's Colorado. A tough place to live. It's beautiful as can be, but it's rough. It's rough. I spent a little bit of time up in Montana, and you know, I'm from the eastern plains of Colorado. That's no picnic out there. It's I hope you don't like your skin because it's gonna dry out and get sandblasted.
Free exfoliation, huh?
Exactly. And I tell you what, I wasn't tough enough for northern Montana. It gets damn cold up there. I mean, I had never been so damn cold in my life. And
Where are we at in Montana?
Big Sandy.
Oh, yeah. I know, right?
The Highland. Yeah.
It gets cold. Yeah.
It gets a little chilly up there. A little bit chilly. I've never been so damn cold in my life. And I'd seen some cold up into that point, but nothing like that. And you get the wind whipping down off the hills, and it was miserable. But, but it's good cow country. I mean, it's
very good.
Beautiful, but it's, I don't know, that most of the West is kind of like that. It's like, honest to God, most of the West is pretty goddamn pretty, but it's also pretty unforgiving, you know, like.
Yeah, it's brutal. And I think them, like at one point, I mean, you can just run a cow anywhere. And now because of just people spreading their wings and moving around and everybody wants their little 10 or 15 or 40 acre parcel, then I think them cows kind of just keep getting pushed up into the parts that aren't that much fun to live in. But there's a lot of parts of the world you can't do anything but run a cow, but they're really good at running cows, you know. So
I think we'll see. But as like you and Darren were talking about, and like I said, I've said many a time on here, like, It's been the same story with the cowboy world since the very beginning. Like, the, you know, first it was barbed wire that was, and then it was it always gets pictured as the damn sod busters. But more often than not, it was a cowboy that wanted to stake out his own claim and start his own herd. And, you know, he'd gather some mavericks and slap his brand on them and start a herd. And then, the big cow bosses didn't like that. Most of them who were Scots and English and they were, and they didn't even own it. It was, they were president of the board or whatever, but it was publicly traded.
Right.
I heard you mention how things got so corporate. And I agree, things have got super corporate, but the more research I do into this whole business, it's just one and the same. Like the mom and pop rancher's always been the, you know, the vast minority in this. Like all the big ranches have always been corporate owned. Like there's been very few like family owned, you know, big outfits. They're most of them were acquired through foreign capital for the most part, Scottish and Englishmen.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of English money coming in, which, like, honestly, a publicly traded cow outfit, that just sounds asinine to me, you know.
But it's crazy.
There's a lot of that, especially in, like, the 1880s and 90s and going forward and stuff. And like, we're right here from Wyoming where, you know, like, Tom Horn, that's just a household name. Everyone knows who that guy was, but that was a very interesting deal. And I was at a branding one time, and for those of you who might not know a Tom Horn, basically all the big outfits got tired of what they would call the squatters and everything, and they hired a guy to look out kind of for their interest and make sure their cattle weren't getting stolen, and then that's kind of where it can get a little muddy. And I was at a branding one time where I thought we were going to have a fight at the dinner table over whether Tom Horn was a no good son of a bitch or if he was a quote goddamn hero. And it's kind of funny, you know, but that whole deal kind of stemmed from the same deal, the corporate versus the little guys. And whether whoever was right or wrong or what really happened on that deal, no one will really ever truly know. And I don't really have an opinion on, but it's been something from the beginning of the structured cattle industry after the Spaniards and everything, at least, you know. So
yeah,
probably even during the Spaniards.
I think a lot of it had to do with the government ownership of the land, honestly.
Absolutely.
If you, outside of a handful of range wars in Texas, most of that shit was settled. And because it was privately owned, there's very little public ground in Texas, and the open range deal is like those big outfits did run roughshod, and they about grazed Wyoming to the ground at one point. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of grass in Wyoming because of it, and it was a boom cycle too. You know, it always happens on those boom economic cycles when people get to speculating, and then when the bottom drops out of it, rather than cutting their losses and get out, they get bigger to make up for the losses. And so then they overgraze even more. And then you're putting a Band-Aid on a gaping chest wound, and it just doesn't work.
That's been the end of a lot of big freaking outfits before, and a lot of family outfits too. Is like, we're losing our ass running 250 cows. We just got to figure out how to run 500, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like, well, you don't have the grass for 250, and it's kind of crazy how, well, that whole period in time was it was such a flash in the pan of the grand scheme of things, but so much freaking happened. It was like, you know, about a 60-year period from end of Civil War to about 1920, and it was just. It was a mad dash to kill the Indians, settle the West, and then, you know, along the way, there's like, you know, there's opportunists at every turn. It's like, we can make a fortune at this. And when
there was a lot of
involved there, shit goes haywire.
I think a lot of the West too was, it takes a certain kind of person to even want to really probably settle that. And a lot of those people might not be the most law-abiding citizens at all, you know, and it's probably real similar to like
your average cow camp, you know,
exactly.
Sounds like your average cast of characters on most cowboy crews. They don't do real good in town.
Yeah, like it's like the Australians, you know, like we need somebody that's tough and not going to freaking give in. So let's send a bunch of drunkards out there and kind of see what happens, you know. Once you start mixing money and then those types of people who really don't bow down to anyone, let alone the government, it has the potential of being a freaking big old barrel of TNT, you know? So,
yeah.
I don't know. Have you ever, this is pretty off subject, but like we got some kind of cool history around here. Have you ever heard of a guy named Big Nose George?
Yes. And Cattle Kate is the same. Is that the same, same band of people?
Same country. Yeah. There was, so I actually used to run a cow camp on the side of Elk Mountain, and I was out there cruising along one day and I find this big marker. It's like it's a rock marker. And it says, like, I can't remember the guy's name, but something Widow Field and Vincent something or other murdered here on whatever date in 1890 something. And it's like, huh, that's interesting. So I got to asking a guy that worked there, I said, what's that marker up there? And they're like, well, it's a marker where Big Nose George killed a couple guys. And for those of you who don't know who Big Nose George is, he killed a sheriff's deputy and a railroad agent and then went on the run. And I guess he actually went to like close to Miles City, Montana, and robbed a cavalry supply train of a shitload of money. And then he ran all over. Well, they finally caught him and they extradited his ass back down here to Wyoming. And the sheriff, because Big Nose George had killed his sheriff deputy, the sheriff hated him. Like, and he was a freaking psycho. So he hung him from a telephone pole in downtown Rawlins and then had Big Nose George skinned, and they made a set of shoes out of his belly. Well, then it gets a little crazier is because the doctor in town decided that he wanted to like do an autopsy on this guy's brain to see if there was something in the outlaw's brain that was different normal people's. Mm-hmm. And so he took his skull, he cut the top of his skull off and looked at his brain and everything, and then gifted the skull cap to Big Nose George to his like 12-year-old daughter. And she had it up into her 30s, and they say that it was used as a doorstop, an ashtray, all sorts of weird shit. Well, then one day in like, I think it's the 40s or 50s, they're remodeling the bank in downtown Rawlins, and they dig up a whiskey keg that's buried in the ground, and there's a guy in there with the top of his head missing. Well, they run this gal down, or I think it was the gal's daughter, and it was a perfect match. And come to find out now, this girl was like using Big Nose George's freaking skull as a ashtray and shit. And I'm like, dude, you had to be weird to live in this part of the world in those days. Yeah. Like, weird.
Well, that it wasn't just that part of the world, because I did an episode here a while back. There was some, he was like a carny slash failed train robber. That he somehow ended up in a wax museum or no, he got mummified, and he was like, it wasn't even mummified. He got shot by a posse. Cause he tried to rob a train, fled on foot, and they shot him at this old barn or something. And but he had no next of kin, so at the funeral home, they got him all whatever that process,
embalmed or something.
Embalmed, that's what it was. That word was slipping my mind, but they embalmed him and whatever, and then nobody claimed him, so he just like set him up in the window as a showpiece for a while, and then somebody bought him he was part of like a traveling freak show as just this dead dude. And so like they'd put quarters in his mouth and shit. And then in the 70s, I think.
In the 70s, I believe it, dude. Well, like, that's what I'm saying is we're still not very civilized, but we were pretty uncivilized not long ago.
This happened back in like the late 1800s, early 1900s. But in the 70s, they were filming some TV show in Hollywood. Oh. And this dude was a prop in one of like their prop closets. This old embalmed son of a bitch that was like, he was missing a couple fingers and shit at that point. But he had like a penny stuck in his nose and And he was just some like low life failed train robber. And then he was like a carny attraction for a while. And people are weird, man. People are really freaking weird.
People are freaking weird. Yeah.
There's I'm sure you're in on a lot of the Facebook groups, you know, the cowboy groups, but there's that one, the big out there group that lady just really wants to talk to Claude Dallas. And that's another discussion. You have guys almost getting a fight over that one too.
Yeah. We won't talk about that too much.
But, it's funny. I just reposted an old episode, where they try to use camels for the army to cross the southern part of the western U.S. through Arizona and New Mexico. And they had a whole bunch of camels for a while. And then
really,
it didn't last very long. Like the guy that started the program was Jefferson Davis when he was Secretary of War before the Civil War. And then of course, once the Civil War kicked off, the Camel Corps kind of went by the wayside. So there was just a bunch of camels roaming around Texas and Arizona and, over.
Like just free ranging.
Yeah. Yeah.
No shit. Yeah. I didn't hear that deal. Huh?
I'll send you the link. I just posted reposted that episode the other day, but it was fascinating. They found this one. They had this one camel that like pawed a woman to death. He was, they called him the Red Ghost. And when they finally caught him, he had had some dude tied on to him with a bunch of rawhide thongs. And like, I don't know if he was like, there was one of the theories was that he tied himself up there. Like he was in the middle of the desert and he was riding this camel and he's like, I can't make it. I'm going to pass out. I'll just let this camel go find some water. And so he tied himself to the top, or somebody tied him up there because maybe he caught, you know, dealing from the bottom of the deck or something. I don't know. But
caught with some wife or something, huh?
Something,
what the hell?
But anyway, this dude just rotted up there on top of this camel and drove him crazy. And he ended up pawing some woman to death. And it was a wild story.
Was the dude tied to the camel when he pawed the gal to death?
Well, he was a skeleton at that point, but yeah. So who knows how long this dude, you know, this poor camel just had this stinking carcass of a man strapped to his back for long before they finally caught him. But
oh, speaking of stinking carcasses, man, I had this freaking Kelpie dog one time, and she was a chicken-killing bitch, right?
Oh, yeah.
One of my buddies, he told me, like, oh, man, just tie that dead chicken to that rip. Just leave it on her till the baling twine rots off. You know, about 6 days of that shit, she stunk so freaking bad you couldn't hardly stand to be around her anyways. But I remember, this is like back in the days of Facebook when, like, the trading sites, you might not even see it. I remember one time, this was like so early Facebook, I traded for a Bill Black hackamore with no pictures, just took the guy's word because we're on flip phones with like freaking teaching pics. And anyways, I remember I was like, how the hell did I get this bitch to quit killing chickens? And this guy gets on there, he's like, I'll tell you how to do it and it'll work too. He said, I knew a guy one time, chicken-killing son of a bitch dog he had, but he liked him, so he didn't want to have to shoot him. But his wife was like, dude, this is the freaking end, right?
Mm.
So this old-timer said, you put that son of a bitch in a 55-gallon drum with a dead chicken that he killed, and you put the freaking, like a metal drum, and they got that ring with the bolt, you know?
Mm.
Said you tighten that thing down, and you go to the tallest hill you can find, and push that son of a bitch off of the freaking hill. He said, by the time that barrel stops, he won't even look at a chicken again. And the guy just said, I'll be damned if it doesn't work.
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I guess if I was that dog, I wouldn't want to mess with a chicken again either. I probably would have went
and killed some neighbor chickens, but probably not that guy.
Yeah, it's I don't think a chicken killing dog ever gets truly over killing chickens. They'll just find somebody else's chickens.
That guy claimed that one was, but I don't know about all that. Yeah. You know, his Facebook from back when they bucked, so it's probably all fake anyways.
But. Yeah. Facebook's just awful gay nowadays. Like
Nobody
has a sense of humor. You can't even go in and start a good argument to sit back and watch the sharks fly anymore. Like, people just, like, they're not even funny about their arguments anymore. It goes immediately to name calling and not even good name calling. You know, it's just like, I don't know. I used to like it when people enjoyed laughing. You know, I enjoyed that part of life. You know, when people would laugh and it was fun.
Yeah, I don't know when that shit went away, but it's not the same.
I don't know. It hadn't went away for me. I wish other people would realize that it is okay to laugh and joke and, you know, like.
For sure. It's damn sure gone on the Facebook, it seems like. But.
No, it's all, you know, humor's outlawed. Anything fun is outlawed, but that's all right. Yeah.
Like, I know when I shared that picture of the cover photo or whatever on my podcast, when Darren got on that deal, and like a couple guys shared it, and literally within 10 minutes, it got to where you couldn't share that link anymore, or the podcast, or the post that I'd shared. And the only thing I can figure, it's because it's a freaking picture with two horses in the box of the pickup, and I think that sucker got flagged for animal cruelty or something.
Oh, most likely, but, yeah. It's,
I'm like, come on, dude, really?
Yeah, it's things got really gay on social media, like right around 2020. It was getting bad before the 2020 election, but 2020 election was where I've been at the same level of followers on my Facebook page for 3 years now. Like, I haven't gained anything at all, and it's just dumb. But
honestly, I'd have got rid of that shit a long time ago if it wasn't for Facebook Marketplace. But I'm a whore for that shit.
Before I started the podcast, that was the only reason I had Facebook, was for all the trading groups and the marketplace. Yeah. Like, that was the only reason. I did nothing else but look at horses and tack on there. And now I still do that some, but goddamn, everybody knows what they have now, and everybody's too goddamn proud of it too.
Well, there is that. Yeah, that ain't no shit.
That's it used to be people were a little more ignorant about what they had, but not so much anymore.
Yeah.
It's harder to find a good deal, but I don't know. You find certain people that you like, and you treat them good. They treat you good. I like Matt Wilson. He just makes cool shit.
He does make cool shit. I've had a couple of his bits and some pretty, I had like a surfer bit he made and shit. I had the badass pair of loopback conchos one time that looked like a freaking compass that Jack Sparrow would carry or something. Yeah. You know, he just kind of makes them off the wall. Cool stuff. It's like, kind of funky.
You don't find, like, if you have any of Matt Wilson stuff, you know, like, you have the one of that. he doesn't have any other like that. It's a one of a kind deal. And I like that about his stuff. And he's just a cool guy, but
I've never met him, but I heard he was pretty cool, you know?
So. Yeah. He's a good buddy of mine. He's playing Elko again this year with him and his wife, Rachel. So cool. They're super interesting couple. Like, they're cowboy as it gets, but they are also artsy as shit. Like, they are artists. Like, their brain works a little different. Like, I'm somewhat on that artsy side a little bit, but like, nothing like them. They are Like their brain works different than mine does, and it's cool. I like watching them operate. They can play some music now.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it one time from him, it was like it had freaking sea turtles and surfers on it. I'm like, who the hell would think of putting surfers on a bridal bit? But it's different and it's cool, you know.
He made me like a campaign button on a snaffle bit. I had some money burning a hole in my pocket and I needed a new snaffle, and I said, make me something cool that you. I said, if you got any ideas rolling around that. You want to haven't made yet anything. I don't care. I'm not picky. And then he said, all right. And he, like, a couple days later, he said, send me a selfie. And so I was like, all right, whatever. So I sent him one. Next thing you know, he's got it drawn up. I'm like doing a little like look over the over the mountains, and it says Vote McKinley 2024.
That's funny, man. That is pretty funny.
Yeah. And I feel kind of like a jackass wearing my own face on a snaffle bit, but it's really fucking cool, so I'm not gonna stop.
Yeah, and I like different shit. One of my cousins one time, there's a pretty cool bit and spur maker outside of Lingle, and he kind of liked to drink a little bit, you know, like quite a little bit. He was super talented, but my cousin decided it was going to be a good deal to get some spurs made, and on the bands it had two pigs doing the deed. Like, nice. One was in silver, one was in brass, and then had some great big old long shanks, and down the shanks it said making bacon. But my this guy, and he's a good bit and spur maker, but like after maybe 10:30, maybe you don't want him freaking carving on your shit, you know?
Yeah.
And he inlaid making bacon, and on one side it was pretty good. And on the other side, he accidentally put like two lowercase letters, and the apostrophe was all screwed up and shit, you know? And I'm like, A for effort, but C for execution. It's still cool as shit, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm like, yeah, making bacon. Like, where the hell do you come up with that shit,
man? That's funny. Yeah, it's, some of those, I like looking at all of it, you know, the real traditional. You know, like the Ernie Marshes or the stuff like Tracy Morrison's putting out nowadays, where it's just, yeah. I mean, it's incredible what they're doing. Scott Hall, same way. Scott Hall is fucking amazing, the stuff that he does. I just can't afford that shit. So I haven't
ever held a Scott Hall, but I had a Morrison bit, and I actually traded a Morrison bit on 3/4 of a Ford pickup a while back. So that tells you
that's pretty cowboy good. Shit.
Like, yeah, he does a really good job. They're cool. But
I've got a pair of spurs that he built me, and then he made me a belt buckle. It says Science Squatch, and it's got a Bigfoot and an alien holding hands.
Oh no, shit.
Yeah. So I made up a story about what would happen if Bigfoot got abducted by aliens. Maybe that's what it was. You know, Bigfoot kicked the shit out of the alien when they abducted him, and then they made a peace. they made a truce, and then the aliens gave the Bigfoot all their technology. And the Bigfoot's what's really the Science Squatch, as I call them. There's what's keeping the human race in check.
Perfect. I like it.
It's dumb. But I've heard dumber, so.
I've heard dumber. Hey, it works. It makes a freaking badass bunch of silver, right?
Yeah. And it's something you could, that's kind of the cool thing about cowboying especially on the slow days when you're just trailing cattle or whatever, and you can just let your mind wander. You can make up some weird shit when you just let your mind wander, you know?
Dude, there's a lot of good things, and some of my greatest ideas came from just trotting around through the desert, boring shit, looking for remnants, like just cruising down a freaking cow trail and letting burning your mind go. Yeah, you never know where that thing might end up.
Yeah, it's I know exactly what you mean. It just especially like even you know, I'm a feedlot cowboy mostly. I've done some outside work, but like most of my cowboy career has been inside, and But it's the same thing, you know, like say you're, you know, it's shipping day or whatever, or you're doing check weights, you know, you've got like a good 2-3 hours just at a trot, just back and forth. And you just get in a rhythm. You don't like, you're not even paying attention to cattle anymore. Cause it's just a routine at that point, you know, like,
right.
It's second nature. So like you're, especially if you got good horses and you got, you know, they're, you know, you always pick the horse for the job, and you get, if you're on the right horse, like you guys are moving at the same time. Like you're not even given instructions to your horses. You're just moving in sync, and yeah, well, that's when your mind can just go.
You're gonna say, if you're me, you're probably jerking and spurring and beating on one a little bit, but
well,
there's
now
time,
and then you have to, you know, you don't want them to get a big head on them.
Yeah. No, I did spend some time, not very much, but some time in a feed yard, and I guarantee you, I think that everybody should at least have to spend a year or two in a yard. I mean, there's a lot of real important things I think a guy can learn from those. But for me, I just hated my shit being covered in, like, all my gear being covered in shit all the time. You know, you guys are tough. It's a different freaking deal out there, you know, for sure.
But. Yeah, well, especially those bigger feedlots. I'm, you know, it's fairly small yard I work at now, so I grew pretty tired of the corporate life pretty quick. You know, I lasted. I was a year and a half with JBS, and then I was about just shy of 6 years with Cactus, and Cactus was, it was still corporate, but it was way better than JBS. And now this, I guess technically it's still corporate owned, but it's way smaller in scale,
right.
and it's more of a cow outfit. I mean, it's just the people that run it are, it's a lot better deal. And I found out the smaller the operation, still, but that's still big enough to do shit, is that's ideal, you know.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I like, actually, some of my coolest cowboy stories and shit come from the big places, but I guarantee you, some of my best memories come from the places that are kind of big enough to keep you busy, a horseback and shit, but you're not just grinding out and like. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, I worked for a place one time. We had like 14,000 head of mother cows. It's just a freaking ground.
See, that's
you know, like everything is place is like half of those guys were real religious, and the other half were working alcoholics. You know, because it's just took a special
kind. When I was
to be on that deal.
Yeah, when I was there at Cactus, we did that confined cow calf thing, and that's the most I've ever worked in my life, and I enjoyed it for the most part, but it wears on you, and you know, like, it was a given that like the month of February or month of October, nobody's off on in October. We're calving, we're breeding, we're shipping, you know, like it was fucking stupid. We had 2.5 calf crops a year, or I guess we had a like an early heifer crop, and then we had a spring crop and a fall crop. And so if you weren't calving, you were weaning, and if you weren't weaning, you were breeding, and if you weren't breeding, you were calving.
Yeah, it was just, sounds like a workhouse. Yeah,
yeah. And
was that when you say confined? Were like, did they run all those things like in feed yard pens, or just what were they doing?
We had we had a couple hundred head out on grass, but we had about I think at our max we had about 7,000 head of mama cows, all in the, everything was in the feedlot. And
wow, yeah, that sounds like it is a workhouse.
There was plenty of cowboy shit to do though. Like I will say I was a pretty good I did a pretty good job of cattle managing that deal because I was good enough. I was still one of the guys enough to where I took care of them. I was able to give them enough perks and still kind of keep us under the budget enough to keep the bosses happy. But like the feed yard provided ropes for them. I tried to get like as much free shit for the guys as I could. And we were the only yard in the company that was allowed to carry ropes. So that was also pretty cool. And so we
don't know if I should tell. Go ahead.
I was like, we were a little fast and loose with the safety regulations, but nobody ever got hurt on my watch, or at least outside of like rolling an ankle or something when a horse falls on you. But like no broken bones, no. I guess I was the only broken bone, and it was like a spiral or not spiral fracture, but like a compression fracture on my wrist. So it like didn't even break to the outside, you know. And
so
it worked out okay.
I worked at a feed yard one time, and they were kind of anti-roping because the year before, there's a real good Mexican guy. His name was Juan, and he was ropey. I mean, like stand on his horse and do the wedding ring around his horse.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just put that thing wherever you wanted. This is before I started, but they were roping outside, and I guess he roped one with the backhand, and then he was kind of shitting and getting away from him, and he missed his slack once or twice, so in a panic he grabbed his rope like, you know, upside down,
yeah,
dallied with his thumb down, cut his thumb off. So then the feed yard was super against roping, right? Well, I guy that I worked for, he sent me this big black horse to ride, and he was okay, but he's kind of a counterfeit bastard. And I remember trying to pull a fat out of a pin one time, and like you get that sumbitch right to the gate, he'd turn around and face up with you, and old Blackie just wasn't broke enough to just, you know, just step in front of him, and that fat fucker'd slip by you, and you'd take, and just three or four times, finally I get pissed, and jerk my rope down, big old fat steer's running from my left to my right, and I reached out there and roped that prick, and right when I like kind of stood up and jerked my slack hard, this black prick bogs his head and goes to farting around. Well, as he's bucking, I'm like, well, I'm just going to take my dallies and jerk this prick on his freaking head, you know, teach him a lesson. Mm-hmm. Well, two coils had crossed over in my hand, and I had 60 foot of rope. Two coils crossed over, and when they did, I'm like, that ain't no big deal. You know, I just picked my hand up and was going to try to kind of work the figure eight out of that, and it come down onto my right hand and half hitched over my hand and sucked her down to my saddle horn. So old Blackie's like kind of half farting around, and that fat steer's running around to the right. I'm like, oh god, this ain't good, you know. Well, it ended up breaking all the bones across my hand, and rope burned the shit out of me. God dang, lost my rope. This fat steer goes, and the worst part is right after I roped him, I've been screwing with him for 15 minutes. Right after I roped the sumbitch and getting a freaking wreck, the bastard runs out with two other head right out the gate and up the alley. I'm like, son of a bitch. So I got it, and he has two others with him. So I got to go up the alley and set a cross gate so I can get my rope back. And this big black sumbitch is snorting around and everything. And finally get him. I think, if I remember right, I like dallied up, had him roped, opened the gate, let the other two fats out, closed the gate. Anyways, I get him up there to the north barn, and I get him doctored. And we kick that prick back, and everyone else had started processing, and I was running late. And I go down there to the processing barn, and I'm holding my hand. Boss says, "What the hell did you do?" And I told him the whole story. He says, "Gosh dang it, man, whatever you do, you better not tell the freaking big boss that you did that roping." I'm like, well, what do you want me to tell him? I mean, you can see a rope track across my hand, you know, and it's all swelled up. And he says, I don't know, but you just better make something up. So I go in there and I tell him the whole deal. I said, I broke my hand. I was going to clock out. I'll go to the doctor. Well, apparently at one point they'd had a kid that had like got a concussion, and he decided to drive himself into town, and he passed out driving into town and wrecked his pickup. So they're like, they wouldn't let me drive in for fear I was going to go into shock or some shit.
No.
So the owner's son drives me into town. And he said, on the way to town, he says, "So what happened? How did you do that?" And I'm like, "Man, I got to come up with a story where I don't sound stupid, but I take one for the team." Because, I mean, they're to the point they're probably going to take ropes away from guys. And so I'm like, "Yeah, man, it was slick up there." And I got him up there to the hospital, went to run the tub gate, and I slipped on the ice, fell, run my hand underneath the tub gate, and got it kind of rammed in there real weird under the gate. He kind of looks at me like he wasn't sure he believed me, you know. So I go up there. Of course, it's my right hand that's broken. So he's filling out my paperwork and everything, and I feel like a freaking dumbass. I'm like, "Oh, I can't believe this just happened." And he puts in there, you know, injury, got hand caught under gate, slipping on ice, blah, blah, blah. So I go in there, and the doctor says, well, he asked me what happens. And I said, "I'll be honest with you, man. Here's what really happened, but I told this guy," and I told him the whole story. And he says, "Well, I hate to do this to you, but because on the paperwork it says that you caught your hand under a metal gate, we got to give you a tetanus shot." So I bent over the doctor's chair there, the table or whatever, and that guy gave me a freaking tetanus shot in the ass. And I had to drive back and went back to processing with my hand in a deal or whatever. When I got back, I told them guys, I said, "You sons of bitches owe me, because I just got a shot in my ass with a needle about that freaking long."
They do use like an overkill needle on that. I mean, you know,
what's that?
On those shot in the ass, that they really, it's overkill on that needle. I mean, it's...
Dude, they kind of hit me up, like, high on the butt, like, almost towards your hip. Man, it felt like it hit bone. Man, that son of a gun hurt.
Oh, but she hit me right in the middle of my ass cheek. I mean, like, right in the fat part of it. And I swear it went right to the center of it. I mean, I felt that thing all the way in. And, needles really don't bother me too much, but that one fucking hurt. It was, and, you know, it's not very, it was probably, what, like 20 gauge or something like that. It was not,
yeah,
you know,
it's not very big, but it's long enough.
Yeah. I don't know. It seemed like overkill on the length, though. It was, yeah, it hurt.
Well, going back to that shit on the feed yards and, like, trying to not let guys pack ropes and shit. I don't know if I should really tell this because it's my uncle's story, but he ain't ever going to get on a damn podcast, so he won't give a shit. But
yeah,
he was running a big feed yard down, I think he said Ulysses, Kansas, or I think it's Ulysses, Kansas. Okay. And so they took I don't know, something happened, someone got hurt, and they decided one time, well, by God, we're not going to let any of our guys pack ropes anymore. And the whole cowboy crew, they're like, "We're quitting, man. If they won't let us pack ropes, we're out." And I guess old Dave said, "Just you boys just wait. I got a plan." And so they made him pack them stupid radios, or at least the big boss. He said, "I got a plan. You guys just wait." And so they made a deal that if you needed a rope, a man in a pickup would drive up the feed alley and deliver you a rope, and you could use it, and you're supposed to give the rope back to them. And they're like, "What the shit? This is the dumbest shit I've ever heard." So he says, "You guys just wait, you know?" And so first day, they're like, "Hey, we need somebody to bring a rope over here to such and such pin, because this chain's broke on this gate. We need something to tie this gate shut with." So a guy, he'd run down there, you know, and they'd tie a gate shut. And then, "Hey, we need you to run down to such and such pen. We got a fat steer up here. It's upside down. We need a rope so we can jerk him upright and get the sumbitch stood up."
Yeah.
So they'd go up there. Of course, you know, there ain't no fat steer there. They're freaking lying about it. But so, well, what the, that son of a bitch got up. I don't know what to tell you. So for like 3 days, they're just making up scenarios where, like, "Hey, we need this rope up here."
Oh, yeah.
Finally, the the third day, the owner says, I don't know if you guys are fucking with us or what, but this guy that's supposed to be the rope deliverer, all he's doing is delivering ropes around. So you guys just please be safe and go ahead and pack your ropes.
That's funny. I know when it was kind of the same thing when I got the boss to let us rope cattle in the feedlot there. And mostly because they're baby calves. I mean, you're not going to stick them damn things through a chute. And every time there was some sort of scenario, I'd be like, boy, it'd be really handy to have a rope right now. Be really handy to have a rope right now. If I had a rope right now, I could do this. I think he just got tired of hearing me say that all the time. And because we worked, that was a good thing. I can't talk shit on him as a manager. He wasn't afraid to work. He'd get out there and work with you. But yeah, we're working side by side all day, every day, and like six times a day. But boy, it'd be sure handy if I had a rope right about now.
Yeah. Some of them, I guess I get it, because some of the guys they get, maybe are whatever. But man, a lot of them feed yards around like that Nebraska country and shit. Man, they're just full of helmets and freaking vests and all sorts of weird safety shit.
Yeah, that's
different world,
we had the safety vest for shipping cattle, which I never really understood why the guys got all up in arms about that. But there was sure enough like six or eight of those pen riders that just, boy, those reflective vests just pissed them the fuck off. And I'm like, I'm fine with wearing this vest if it means a feed truck's not going to run over my ass. I'm fine with it. I did not see why everybody was upset about it. It made zero sense to me, but it pissed people off. But then I know after I left JBS, they got to where they had a list of bits that were approved that you could use on your horses. And I'm like, I'm glad I'm out there. I wouldn't have lasted.
Yeah, I'd probably be out too. Hey, speaking of like weird safety shit and everything, I can't remember if it was them or if JBS or Cargill or something, but I saw like 2 years ago there was a deal that they'd come out with on one of them packing plants, and they have a freaking robot. Did you see that thing with them freaking flags?
Did you see that Bramer steer run it right the fuck over too?
I didn't see that part. Yeah. I would have paid to see it. But that little green machine, it's running around and the guy's running it, and them old two flags just a flopping around, and I'm like, I don't know what the hell that fucking machine costs, but I got two boys that would do that shit for free.
Yeah. I saw a big old Bramer steer run that thing right over, and it was just on its side going in a circle with the flag still flopping.
That goes kind of back to what Darren and I were talking about. I'm like, man, I don't think cowboy, like, you can't ever replace a good cowboy. Uh-huh. You can't replace him. Like, I've heard a guy one time, he's talking about, like, one day, they'll have the ear tags in that are going to be able to take temperature, so they'll know which one needs doctored, so you can go out to a feedlot pen and doctor it there at the tank or whatever. Like, well, yeah, maybe one day they'll have that technology, but if the margins on the cattle for the producers keep getting smaller and smaller, it's going to be more and more unobtainable for those people to where, like, how do you reproduce? How do you reproduce a cowboy with technology? I don't know. I don't think it's, maybe one day, but I don't think it's possible.
Well, The way I see it, the way the packing side of things going is they're phasing out the range cattle completely. They're investing heavily into this lab grown meat stuff, and then they're also, like, you don't see a Holstein steer anymore. You see crossbred Angus calves, and now right. they just got a they got that pipeline, and those cattle grade the same as beef cattle, take a little bit longer to feed, never see a blade of grass in their life, but they the end product's, you know, the same as far as the packer's concerned. So, and now they don't have to deal with a bunch of crotchety ass ranchers. So, it all fits into that vertically integrated system really, really nicely. But, and this is where I think ranchers have, are behind the ball on this, is like the, your average like hippie producer or like hippie consumer, they would rather like they would rather buy something where they know the people that grew it, like even if they don't yep. necessarily agree with your practices, they'd rather do that than buy it from Walmart or somewhere. And not their
yeah I would too
I yeah. Yeah, and for like I'm sure I'll get some flack from people about, you know, that the meat in Walmart being the same as buying it from your, it's not, it is absolutely not, like it's all beef, yes, but there, you have no idea where that beef came from in the grocery store. It might be American beef, it might not be.
Well, you or I know, because I've seen some old cancer-eyed, no good, big-legged fucking cows go to. But I mean, that's right. Where they go is Walmart, you know. So.
Right. Well, and the way that packaging thing works, you know, like all they have to do is repackage foreign beef. And it adds value to it, so now they can market as a product of the USA.
Yep.
And so, who knows? But if you buy it from the guy that raised it, take it to a local processor, you know, you know what you have. It's a whole different game. It yep. might be the same grade of meat, maybe past the same inspection, but you know, when you open a package of hamburger, you get meat from one animal in that package of hamburger, where
right.
your average yep. package from the grocery store is going to have about 500 to 600 different animals that make up that one package, you know, like not even yep. saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying that that's the reality of it. There's just there. It's a volume when you come to those big packers, and you got to have it. If people are going to eat that much beef, you have to have it. But there's,
yeah, I would like to see personally, as a smaller time producer and everything, like, I know there's one guy in Montana that's pushing pretty hard for it. And I think that there's one more in Nebraska that's kind of pushing pretty hard, but I would like to see something like a rancher owned co-op packing plant, like, per state in the, you know, when you have that much of a monopoly on who's packing and selling the beef, it's not going to be good for the people who are not the packers.
Right.
You know, I'd like to see if they could figure out, and I don't know, maybe it's just not, maybe it's not sustainable. Maybe it's something where everyone's always going to fight because it's a co-op deal or what. But like, if you could get some smaller co-op owned packing plants that, like, say there's one in Wyoming or Montana or wherever that sells that state's beef, and maybe they're backed by the stock growers of that state, it would be, there should be a lot of upside potential for that state's beef,
yeah,
you know. But I don't know if that's ever going to come down the line. There's a lot of litigation stuff there, so
yeah, I know. Who knows? There was, well, Thomas Massie had introduced the Prime Act here a while back, which would lift a lot of the regulations on your small time processors and allow them to, like, allow a state inspection to equal the same, have to carry the same weight as a USDA inspection, so your state inspector can come.
Right.
Stamp it, and you'd be able to sell across state lines that way, which it seems like there should be but that doesn't bode well for the packers, because then they got to go compete. Like, you know, if you have somewhere close where you can take a load of cattle, a fat cattle, like you know, it makes more sense. And especially if that guy's paying you cash for those, like that makes sense. But that's why the Packers moved out of Chicago. They didn't want to bid on the cattle at the stockyards. You know, they didn't want to deal with the unions in the city. They wanted to, so they moved them out to smaller towns, and then they didn't worry about the unions. They just imported cheap foreign labor. And then they started going straight to the rancher, and then he signed him to what looked like a pretty sweetheart deal until he got further along into it. And then but the Packers, he's locked up his supply for like the next 3-4 years, and knows what he's going to have. You know, it's like they're very shrewd. Like there's a reason a lot
Oh
of their
yeah.
ranchers have been losing a lot. It's they're, like those guys,
No,
the Packers
they
are
are
pretty damn
not
good at
bad
what they
business.
do, and they've rigged
They're
the.
not bad business.
No, and they also use their good business sense to also wedge their way in on government, and then they've been able to rig the game to where they're not cheating. They're playing by the rules that they set.
Well, you know, I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard one time that like there was a bunch of guys that were involved. What the hell is it? Is it JBS that was heavily involved in Brazil?
Oh
Was that
yeah.
right?
Yeah, they're
JBS?
Brazilian owned.
Yeah, JBS. Someone told me one time that like most of their higher up, like the CEO, CFO, all that shit at one point had been in jail for embezzlement.
Oh yeah,
And
or
they're
some sort of corruption charges, yeah. They were yeah, and like there's been plenty of people in the Brazilian government that like there's members of their government in prison for that were getting paid, you know, $1 million a year or something by the Batistas who own, you know, JBS. But it was the same thing here though. They bought out a bunch of the chicken stuff, they bought a bunch of the pork stuff, and then they
Yeah, beef strike. It's coming down the line. We're gonna be. We're the last of the holdouts as far as like the chicken and pork stuff. I mean, beef's right next. It's coming. You know, I don't know why it's. As much as some of these guys like to screw around with subsidies and all that stuff, I'm kind of impressed that really the beef industry isn't already overrun by the same exact thing because. Chicken and pork is already there,
Well, chicken
so
and pork are a lot more predictable too, and it doesn't take near as long to go from, you know, birth to the plate either, you know, where it takes a minimum
it's
of
good.
2 years for a steer to be born and then hit your, you know, for the cow to be bred and then for the steer to hit your plate, you know, that's a minimum 2 year process. So it's a little tougher, but like I said, with that dairy industry that which is heavily subsidized, that's why, and these subsidized industries, that's like corn and soybean. That's why America is so damn fat. It's sugar and corn and soybean and all the stuff, but that's all subsidized too. There's no incentive for the Midwest farmers to grow anything other than corn and soybeans because nothing else is subsidized. So, and it's
I
it goes
agree.
back.
But they're doing that shit with the cattle industry right now with LRP.
Oh
Uh,
yeah.
it's I mean that's what it is. It's a government subsidy, and everybody you talk to talks about how it's a dirty good son of a gun. You're guaranteed to do this, and it's worth the and like. I hate to be that guy, but I don't. For anybody who is a book reader, if you've ever read the book "The Time It Never
I was
Rained"
getting
by
ready
Elmer
to
Kelton,
mention that too.
it's that's for all you guys listening. That's what LRP is. Be careful how you handle yourselves with
And
that. I'm not saying you shouldn't do it, but you should be careful how you use it.
on that note, for all you folks that don't like to physically read books, it's on audiobook. You can go to Audible, sign up for a free month, and you can buy it with that, and then you can cancel your membership and you get it for free. So it's
It's a good, and actually, I did not read the book. I actually listened to it on Audible, and the version on Audible is very well read. Yeah, it's worth listening or reading.
I've read it and listened to it both, but the first time I encountered it was on audio book, and it's awesome. It's a really well done book, a lot of wisdom there. But yeah, there's literally no reason for you not to read it, even if you don't know how to read. Just go find it on Audible, But yeah, I'm of the same mind. It's all these subsidies. Just whenever I hear anything about them, it's just it always goes back to the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I don't think any of these subsidies start with any evil intentions, but it distorts the market. The market is all about signals, where I grew up, Southeast Colorado. The High Plains was not meant for farming. It's pretty obvious at this point, I would say, that it's not a good place to farm. It never has been. You know, there was a couple year stretch where wheat farming was really good, but you plowed all the grass under and there was nothing to hold the dirt down when it dried out and the wind blew. You know, that's what the grass was there for.
Yeah, like 150, 200 years of topsoil, you guys just fucked up because you plowed it for 10 years in a row and let it...
That all came through subsidized land and subsidized wheat. And when the wheat market dropped, instead of... there were plenty of farmers that got out then. Those were the smart ones. But the rest of them doubled down and bought more land and plowed more under and tried to make up the loss by producing more. And that just... It made the problem worse when people talk about man-made climate change, I'm not on board with this whole green energy push that we got, but I'm very much a believer that men can change the climate. We don't control the weather, but we can control the conditions on the ground that make it a lot worse, you know?
Yes. Absolutely.
Phoenix, they had, was it 31 days of over 110 degree heat, but it was just Phoenix and Vegas. Everywhere outside the little heat dome that's caused by all the concrete and steel was 10 degrees cooler.
Yeah. And everybody around that, fuck all of Arizona. What do they call it? Not landscape, rockscaping.
Yeah.
Everything. They cover everything in concrete and rocks.
Yeah.
And, cinder blocks or whatever, but yeah. So, and also, where we are, we're from Wyoming and the wind always blows. Mm-hmm. And so we have a lot of wind farms around here and big wind generators and shit. Okay. Yeah. Without going too far down that rabbit hole about why I think that it's one of the worst fucking, it's stupid, is number one, a wind turbine cannot actually produce enough energy to pay for how much money that it took to erect it and the infrastructure it takes to keep it running,
mm-hmm.
including roads and everything, BLM and private leases for the roads and all that stuff.
And the diesel. Another thing is the generators to turn the blades when the wind's not blowing.
Well, so I have heard that before. I will say here, when the wind's not blowing, they're just playing ass off. But the other thing is if the wind's blowing too hard, they put the brakes on and they turn them off because then they can get going too fast, and that doesn't work either. Well, the other interesting thing is I've got a cousin who's an electrician. He's working on a big substation out here not too far from the house. And he was telling me that the blades on those windmills are only good for I can't remember if he told me if it was 6 or 10 years, but yeah, somewhere around there.
I've heard.
I think it was 10 years, but it's something about the sunlight screws them up. So most of the blades are never actually mounted on one of those things until they're 2 or 3 years old. So they have 6 or 7 year life on them at the most.
Huh.
And then the other thing is we run some cows on a lease up there in Shirley Basin, Wyoming, and there's wind farms all over. And if you go to a certain spot, you can see two different big, well, actually it's technically three different wind farms. And I have seen too many times where black thunderheads full of rain come up and get to those wind turbines and dissipate and then go around and then form again after the wind farms. And so if you paid attention in science class, rain to form and actually get heavy enough to fall as raindrops, they got that the water has to rise and fall, rise and fall, rise and fall till it gets so heavy it falls. So I think, this is my own opinion, what is happening is the wind turbines are dissipating, or they're screwing up the rain patterns.
Yeah.
And all the bunny lover, tree hugger, freaking goofballs that think we're saving the environment by doing that. And I'm not saying it's on a big scale, but I honestly do believe that on a small scale that they're causing little micro droughts where they are and downwind of where they are for a while till the storm clouds can build up
or something.
Well, I've even seen pictures online where storm clouds would come up, and then when they hit those turbines for a long time behind, that like the storm clouds are really, they're like corrupt and like they're not, they're really weird. And then they, after a while, they kind of form again and they'll start raining, you know. But it's, yeah, I think, like you said, you know, paved in good intentions, but they're, the worst thing that you can ever hear, in my opinion, is I'm from the government and I'm here to help you.
Yeah.
You know, like that usually does not end well.
No. So. No, it really don't. But I don't know, because like we're based off of market economy, you know, like it's heavily influenced by the government at this point, but it's still a market-based economy. And every time the government interferes with it, it disrupts the signals that the market sends to other aspects of the market. You know, it's
right.
Like yeah. if it wasn't for the subsidies of corn and the mandate for like the ethanol, the price of corn would crater because we produce so much of it, and guys would stop growing corn because they can't make money on it anymore, and they would have to find something else. But the farmers don't want to do that either, because they're, I mean, maybe it's not a great living, but they've got a pretty good deal going with these subsidies and this, all these like insurance deals that, I mean, it's, I mean, I understand why they do it. It's, but like, they don't.
Well, you got to make your land payment, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it don't matter if you're a farmer or a rancher or you're leasing a place. You have to pay the bills. You have to make a land payment. So when if something doesn't work, I understand, and I'm not chastising the people that do that. You know, yeah. I mean, you got to pay the bills. But the thing is if you're doing it time and time and time again, all it is it becomes a crutch for those producers.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it. Okay, what happens if you take those away? Well, now all of a sudden we're dependent on the government to make a living. And when that goes away, we're standing with our pants down.
Yep.
I mean, it history repeats itself. It's been done. It doesn't work, you know. So.
Yeah, it's but like you said, people get dependent, and dependent people get I mean, if that's your living, because that's how they make their living, and you take that, try to take that away from somebody, they're gonna fight. That's also been proven time after time, and yeah, so that's why.
Yeah.
And then it makes it easier for government to just roll all of that farm stuff into one great big bill, and you throw food stamps in there with it, so you get the Democrats on board and whatever, and then. The Republicans, when they pass it, they can say, hey, we helped the farmers. And then the Democrats can say, hey, we helped poor people while helping the farmers.
Well, and then
and everybody gets fucked.
I think it was, I can't remember if it was 22 or if it was, I think it was in 2023 that the frickin' farm bill, someone told me that I think it was 2% of the farm bill actually involved agriculture.
Yeah, something like that.
And then it was food stamps and whatever the frick else, you know. I mean, it's just like you said, it goes under farm bill. Mm-hmm. Republicans will vote on it. We help the farmers. The Democrats will vote on it because there's food stamps. And then we're also okay, so there's like 3% of the farm bill, and then we're going to add a bunch of 97% of other bullshit.
Right.
And it's going to get passed. But it's the farm bill. Uh-huh. It was good. It was good for our country. And it's just freaking asinine, you know. And the problem is, what a friend of mine and I try not to get into politics too much because it just pisses me off. Uh-huh. But there, so the one thing that drives me nuts, okay, and we talked about the, like, how do we get to the point where they're talking about, like, literally minor attracted people is a thing they're trying to, you know, and all the LGBTQ freaking, yeah, whatever you want to pump a donkey shit. So they're like, how does it get to that point where, like, we, you know, and I thought, you know, I know how it gets to the point, is because the people that are pushing for all of that are the ones that have no life, no jobs, no responsibilities, farming the government. I'm not saying farming as farm. I mean, taking welfare, farming the government. They have time on their hands, and they're the ones that are spending their time jumping up and down screaming. So they're the ones that are heard from CNN or whoever else, mm-hmm, right? Well, the people who are actually holding the country together, that are the fiber of the country, are out here working their asses off trying to feed the rest of them. We don't have time to sit there and argue with that stupid shit. So then the majority starts to feel like they're overrun by the people who have no time on their hands preaching this shit, when really we're still the majority. It's just that the people in town think that we're not there because we don't have a voice.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if that makes sense.
It takes
sense.
A lot of people just saying no. I mean, just saying no. That's really what ended COVID, was enough people finally said, I'm not doing this anymore. That's what really happened. It wasn't the science changed. We all knew what the science was pretty early on, particularly us in animal, like, that work within animal health. We know what vaccines are. We know how they work. We know how viruses work. And you could tell from about April to May of 2020 that they were feeding us full of shit. Like, if you've ever swept out a granary or any sort of grain bin, you know those N95 masks are not 100% effective. You know that. And you know that a cloth mask ain't going to do a goddamn thing.
Well,
but you're not allowed
to say that, or
you weren't allowed to say that at the time, but you were, you just had to say it. And enough people finally did. Yeah. And that's what caused it all to come to an end.
Well, I remember going into my local Walmart, sir, you need a mask. And I just, no, thank you. And I told my wife, I hate to be that guy, but this is the fucking hill that I'll die on. Like, I would rather die of COVID than have some overweight freaking lady at the Walmart tell me that I am required to wear a mask or they won't serve me. And I told my wife this. She'd get pissed every once in a while. Like, how can they tell? And I told her, no, listen, here's the thing. If they want to tell me that I have to wear a mask to go into their business, that's fine. That's their right. This is America. They can say, they can do whatever the hell they want to do. Mm-hmm. I do not have to follow that. And what I hope is that the people who had that pushed upon them, that they didn't agree with that, remember that when all this shit is over.
Yeah.
If they want to try to push that shit on me, that's fine. Hopefully I'm strong-willed enough to say, no, I ain't freaking doing it. And nobody that was trying to actually tell you that, like, they're not going to stand up to you and say, you have to wear one.
No.
I mean, like, I'll freaking leave, you know. Just tell them no. But the interesting thing to me was the people that I kind of considered to be fairly strong-willed that would say, oh, okay, well, They tell you have to do it. No, they can say all they want, but last I checked, we don't live in Russia. And the proudest moment I've ever had in my life, I'm not kidding you, my boy, he was probably 6. He's 9. So he was, I don't know, 6 at the time or something. His grandma, my two boys, we sent them over to their grandma's house for like a week. This is probably the end of 2020 or something. Mm-hmm. And she decides that she's going to take them in to get like professional pictures taken of the two boys, right?
Yeah.
And so, my boy, he always heard, we don't have, no, I told him this too. You ever go to school or any of that crap? If anyone ever tells you you have to wear a mask, you can tell them no if you don't want to, and I will stick up for you, okay? So they go to get their picture taken, and their grandma, I guess, reaches in the console and reaches in the back and tries to hand them both a mask. And I guess my oldest boy, my little one, puts it on. You know, he's just a little tiny kid. The oldest one says, "Why do I have to wear that?" And she said, "Because there's a sign on the door that all masks are required." And my kid must have heard me say this, but he looks, he says, "Masks? What is this, Russia?" But I'm like, I think there ain't, you know, like, instill that in your kids to let them know that, I mean, this is supposed to be a free country, and that stuff, that, okay, so they might not convince us that that's the correct way, but then most of the our kids' generation will accept that. And by their grandkids' generation, it's not even questioned anymore, you know.
Yeah, that's true. That's why we homeschool. Like, it was all over the mask deal. Like, my daughter was getting ready to go to kindergarten, and I was like, they're requiring masks. And, nah, well, we've talked about homeschooling for a long time. I guess we're homeschooling now. So fuck it.
Yeah,
and we have been.
And see, we worked on a cow camp at that time, so it wasn't even a question. Just that was my oldest kid's first year, so. We just homeschooled anyways, and then we later on moved and had an opportunity for our kids to go to town school, and it was like right kind of at the end of that deal, and I asked them straight up, I said, "We want to know what your deal is with masks, because that's going to decide if our kids come here or not." And she said, "Well, if the mandate comes back, we have to tell you, you are supposed to wear a mask, but we don't like them around here, and we won't enforce it." I said, "Well, that sounds like a school we're willing to go to."
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. You know, they fought the Revolutionary War over like a few percent tea tax.
Yeah.
And then here we are, we're getting told we have to wear masks, and people bow down. It doesn't take long.
Yeah. Yeah, and meanwhile, our taxes they tax fucking everything. Everything.
You know, though, I read somewhere that most countries, the governments force inflation so fast that like 100 to 150 years is how long most currencies last.
Yeah.
Well, we're from 17, well, not 6, but after the Revolutionary War till now, we're still operating on the dollar, although it's changed a little bit. Yeah, like, I think, well, I read somewhere that although the dollar really ain't worth shit and inflation's been biting us in the balls and everything, that America is like one of the longest lasting countries with a certain currency. I think that the Roman Empire might have been longer. I'm sure they were longer, but I mean, although this country is screwed up, it's still the best country there is to live in, I believe.
Well, I think that's 100% true. There's I say this as having only visited just over the border into Mexico. Other than that, I've not been outside of the U.S., but I do a lot of reading. I pay attention to stuff that's going on in the world. I'm a history guy, so I'm always trying to figure out. Like, I've been reading. I'm always like everybody always hates the Jews. Like, why is everybody pissed at the Jews all the time? Like, why? So, like, I'm going back to, like, the Russian Empire. See, what caused them to hate the Jews? Turns out there's several different sides to that story, and I don't know which one's right, but I'm going to read it all and see. You know, it's all interesting. It's fascinating. It helps you figure out what the hell things are happening the way they are now. And, like, that currency if you go back and listen to, like, Ron Paul's stuff, he's been talking about the Federal Reserve forever, and that's because, once again, like, currency only has value if we assign it value, and the dollar had value because it was backed by precious metals, and then...
Yeah, and it wasn't.
Yeah, now, after Reagan, or not Reagan, Nixon pulled us off the gold standard, now it's strictly upheld by the force of the U.S. military. Like, that's, we enforce our will on countries to make sure they trade for international goods in the U.S. dollar, and that's what gives the dollar its value. But, yeah, we've done a pretty good job of pissing that away, too, so it's,
Yeah,
I think we're in for some economic hardship here in the near future. I don't know.
I hate to be that guy. Like I said, I try not to get too political, but I'm afraid that there's a possibility that we're gonna be in for more than just economic hardship.
Well, I got so a good too, friend, of, but I
I've got a very good friend of mine who he does. Well, he actually went to Ukraine last year for a month in February, and he's getting ready to go here again pretty quick, this time on some, like, humanitarian aid stuff. And he follows all that stuff a lot more closely than I do. And he said that you would be absolutely amazed the amount of known terrorists that have crossed into the United States on the southern border here in the last couple years. So
I've heard that too, and I don't know how much to make of that, and I don't focus on it too much because there ain't a goddamn thing I can do about it at the moment. You know, I can, if shooting starts, I can shoot back for a little while, but
yeah, me too.
But other than that, you know, I focus on the cows, I focus on my kids, and I focus on putting out a good
podcast. I think that is the only thing you can do on all that, mm-hmm, is taking care of your tribe. I mean, whoever that is, your friends, your family, raise them up the best you can, do what you can, try to teach them to be upstanding citizens that know how to take care of themselves.
Right. And quit bitching about the younger generation being soft when you have to... You know, when you lose your breath trying to tie your shoes, you know, like if you're fat as fuck, you're also soft as fuck. So don't be bitching about these younger kids being soft. You know, like that's.
Hey, that was a personal attack.
Hey,
God damn.
I was a fatty my own self. You know? that was the thing, though, is I was like, I'm still fairly young and I should not be short of breath, you know, pulling my boots on. So like, it's time to get back into shape, you know. We look back at these old timers that we look up to. Ain't many of them that I look up to that ever let themselves get fat either. You know, they kept themselves in good shape, and so I don't know. As cliche as it sounds, it's like you got to take care of this old thing if you want to keep on trucking. So If you don't want to be soft, you got to be somewhat in shape, you know, hard men go out and do hard shit, and you got to be in shape to do all that stuff. And,
that's exactly right. I quit cowboying full time. I mean, we still run our cows and I day work, and I got two different deals where we run some customer cows as well. But a couple years ago, I started brand inspecting for the state of Wyoming, and you just spend too much time driving around in a pickup, mm-hmm, and then you go to a shipping and everybody feeds you homemade donuts and everything can freaking eat. If you're used to like living in a cow camp and shit that first year, you're just like, this is the greatest thing ever. Then pretty soon you start getting fat, and finally this winter, I'm like, man, this shit's getting out of hand, you know, and I kind of started to try to get a little, it's not very much, but a little half-ass workout regimen, and start eating a little better and drinking a little bit less beer, because you're exactly right. I think there's something that happens when you hit 30, 35 years old where you kind of start to realize a little bit like, yeah, I ain't 20. I can't eat two tombstones a day and still be.
Well, it doesn't catch have up a six with pack. You all at once, but you notice it after a while. Like, you start noticing it, and you're like, I guess I am. Yeah. Like, you're not, I'm not slowed all the way down, but I'm definitely slower than I was. And I'm doing my best to reverse that as much as I can, especially with my kids getting older. You know, they're both in wrestling and scouts and stuff, you know, and like, I'd love to take them on some big long hikes and go overnight camping trips too with the troop. And I got to get up the mountain too. So let's get up, fatty. Let's go. You know, I've got time to do it now. Well, I can still catch the little bastards, but here in a couple of years, I won't be able to, if I keep at the way I'm at it. So I gotta get in shape now. So I'll be ready when they're teenagers.
You bet. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you got to be able to, I think there's something different in the kids growing up who are 16 years old that still like kind of think that maybe their dad can beat their ass, you know, like them kids are just a little, maybe a little bit more in order at times. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I don't know. It's amazing. Like the different types of communities. Like I always like, obviously I gravitate towards like ranch and cowboy types, military types, and then like now I'm in, like, I wrestled a little bit in junior high and high school, and I wasn't ever real good at it, but I wrestled some, but got the kids into, and I love going and interacting with like the kids at wrestling tournaments. They're all respectful, they're all little savages, you know, especially like the older they get, they're all, you know, they're all pretty intense, but they're very respectful. They shake your hand, they look you in the eye, and which is, you know, I'm sort of halfway autistic, so I don't like a whole lot of eye contact, so it weirds me out a little bit. But you know, like I respect that, you know, and it's sort of like, these are good. These are kind of people I like to be around, you know, like, because their kids aren't assholes. You know, that's how I anymore. That's how I judge people, is how their kids act. Is like, your kids assholes, or you probably suck as a person somehow. You might be fun to hang out with, but I bet at the end of it, you kind of suck as a person, or you're not keeping your shit together. And
and
it's a really good indicator. And not always. I mean, sometimes there's kids that just,
well,
that kids that are good for no reason, or kids that are bad for no reason. And but for the most part, it's almost always the parents. And yeah, so if the kids are good, I figure their parents are there. They get something good going there. Like, they may not be my best friends, but at least, like, hey, those are the right type of people.
At least, hopefully, if nothing else, at least have it in mind of what kind of humans they're producing, you know, and Ray. Because, I think there's a lot of people who just have kids and they treat them like having a little pack of puppies around, and they feed them and clean their butt and they run wild, and then pretty soon they're 18 and they have no understanding of how the world works. And then there's people who maybe aren't the best or the nicest people in the world or something, that at least, if nothing else, they're trying to raise productive citizens. And
yeah,
it's pretty important. I would agree with that.
Yeah, I think so. It's, I mean, I said, it's, you learn a lot throughout this life if you pay attention a little bit. And, it's also funny, like, the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know shit. But there's one thing I've learned, is like, that's really all you can focus on, or all you can really control, is how you forge your family going forward, is how you take care of your own shit. And then if you're around enough people like that take care of their own shit, then you can group together and, you know, take on a city government or whatever, a county, you know, and eventually you can get back to where we're in a decent society again. Like, I would love to take my kids to New York City and show them around someday, but I don't want to do it now. I don't want them to get stabbed by some Venezuelan immigrant that I don't know why the hell he's over here in the first place. You know, like, it's,
Well,
like those,
and sorry if I'm,
oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, sorry if I'm walking on you here a little bit. You'd kind of made the comment about like, I just try to raise my kids and worry about cows and whatever. And I don't know. There's not much I can do about it right now.
Yeah.
And there was a very good buddy of mine. His name's Justin Harvey. Probably not well known. He's really not on social media or anything, but like he is a real good cowboy, a good hand, and a very good friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And we have talks sometimes on the phone that'll go on for 3-4 hours. And it's like, who knows, man? It might be dogs, horses, women, cattle.
Yeah.
Freaking dinosaurs. I mean, it just like, who knows where that conversation will go. And I made the comment one time. I said, you know, I used to follow politics really hard, but I got to the point where it actually started to affect my mood. Like I was getting bummed out or pissed. Like, man, how are we this screwed up? I told him one time, I said, I don't know. Like, what do you do? I can't do anything to fix it. And he told me, he said, I don't know where he'd heard it, but he said he'd heard somewhere one time, if you want to change the world, first you have to make your bed.
Yeah.
You have to clean your room.
Yeah.
And if you can't make your bed, how can you expect to change anything? And like, just start by cleaning your room, and then who knows, maybe, well, that felt good, and you can go help your kid clean his room. And then, you know, it just, what he was getting at is pretty soon doing good things that aren't fun to do start to snowball. And then pretty soon maybe your kid helps some kid get picked up at school that got pushed down from a bully, mm-hmm. or something. And the butterfly effect of that. And then, I mean, pretty soon, who knows, one day that might reach into your city government or something.
Yeah.
And when he started to explain it to me like that, I'm like, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's like anything. What can we do? Well, it feels like we can't do anything, but basically what it boils down to is just do the best you can in life and try to raise good kids.
Yep.
And
take care of what you can take care of, and leave the rest to God.
Yeah, take care of your tribe. Yeah, exactly. Just take care of you, and have a tribe. Like, if you have friends that treat you right, treat them right.
Yeah.
Do right by your family and your friends, and like, who knows where that can go in life, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that sounds kind of preachy for a cowboy podcast.
No,
but we haven't talked about stuff.
I started strong, but it's like any other cowboy conversation. You never know where it's going to lead off to, and that's when when you ask me, I don't know. It's good conversation. It's good conversation. We'll just keep talking. It don't matter what the topic is. But no, I think there's a lot to that. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know. I've run some pretty decent sized crews, and I've been the low man on the totem pole on some decent sized crew. And I don't know, the good boss has always said, do your job, and then when your job's done, see where you can help out. That's what you can do. But I tell my kids, yeah, all the time when they get to bickering too, like, you worry about you do what you can do. Do your job. Don't worry about your sister. You don't worry about your brother. You do your job, and the rest of it will take care of itself. You know, you do your job.
Yep.
Take care of your shit. And if you can't control the outcome, why worry about it? If you can't control it, don't worry about it. It'll work out how it's supposed to.
I don't know if you like follow Jocko Willink at all or anything, but he kind of talks.
Familiar with him? I don't listen to him regularly, but I like his stuff a lot.
He kind of talks about the same thing. Like, I remember hearing one time that someone had sent in a question. Like, here's the deal, man. Like, I've tried to do what you say and take ownership and go above and beyond. Well, what happens if the guy that you work for is just a piece of shit? Like, you know, I mean, he's just no good. Like, just, he's a bad human being, whatever. He freaking beats his wife, or he's a bad leader. And he said, you know, just say, this is hard to do, but good. Say good, work harder. And it's funny, when if you work hard enough, pretty soon you'll start making him look good.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty soon you make him look so good that your life just got easier, because he looks at you on favor. And then maybe his boss looks at you on favor. And it's no cutting cinches or backstabbing or anything. Just good. Just go do your shit and you will prosper.
Right.
You know, and I've thought about that a lot in the last 2 or 3 years of hearing that. And it's hard to do at times, especially if you don't like the situation you're in. But if you just go do what you're supposed to do, just like you're saying. I tell my kids the same thing that you tell your kids. My oldest boy, I always tell him, quit mother henning your brother. Mm-hmm. You know, like, let him get in trouble.
Yeah.
If he's not doing his deal, you go do your deal. If he don't do his deal, but quit telling him what to do. You know, just do your deal. Yeah. Same thing.
Well, and like on the cowboy end of things, that is one of the great things about cowboying, especially if you're single and a younger guy, is that riding for the brand bullshit, that was invented by the rancher, not the cowboy. I guarantee you that, because the cowboy's mentality is, if I don't like this job, I was looking for one when I found this one, so on to the next one, you know? And now if you got wife and kids, it's a little tougher to do that. But still, I mean, I picked up and moved from Kansas to Nevada when I was, 31 years old, and wife and two kids, you know? It sucked in the transition, but it was better in the long run. You know, it's just, it's still America. You can pick up and go wherever you want to.
Yeah, exactly.
And I can't do that. It's too expensive. Yeah. Eat some beans instead. You know, make your own coffee at home.
Yeah, dude, I'm the king of moving. We countered it up one time. And so now some of these would be like living on the same ranch and moving to a nicer house, or, like, one time we had a cow camp job where we'd stay at one place in the winter, and then we'd move. Like, we went to our winter place to cow camp to the winter place to cow camp back to the winter place before we ever left. Mm. So we had 5 moves on one ranch, but we figured it up the other day, and my oldest kid's 9 years old, and I think he's moved 13 times, you know, and so, like, we were the king of moving around. And, like, man, I would have left places back in the day from, I didn't like the way the barn door swung, or I'm like, man, you know, like, just stupid shit. I left a place one time because I was tired of my pickup being a piece of shit, you know, like, or my ranch pickup. No, and it's just,
that's the great thing about life is, like, I mean, at the end of the day, you can just move. Like, you don't have to stay there, and that's part of it. Like, I think it was Jordan Peterson who's the make your bed guys. He had the 12 rules for life, and the same type of thing. It's like, you start small. You start with what you can control. And, like, I did the 75 hard challenges, another one of those fitness challenges. But if you look at what you're supposed to do, it seems hard, but it's really not. Like, You quit boozing for 75 days. You work out twice a day. You drink a gallon of water, which is good for you. All of that shit's good for you. It helps you live longer. And then read 10 pages of a nonfiction book. You know, like, it's, if you really like it, it's hard to get it all in 75 days in a row if you're busy and whatnot. But it's possible, and you feel awesome when you do. Like, it's, that's the crazy part is, like, you realize how much water you need once you start actually drinking what you're supposed to drink.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree with that. And it's kind of like, I had a guy tell me one time, he said, I said, man, that sucks. And he said, no, it doesn't suck. The thought of it sucks. Yeah. He said, it's no different than moving a bunch of little square bales or going and fixing fence or going and cheeking around some freaking bronc on some place that you're on that you're afraid is going to freaking fart you off or whatever out in the sagebrush. She said, no, really, once you get going, you're just going and it's fine. He said, the thought of it sucks, yeah. And the thought of starting it sucks, but it doesn't suck, man. Like, I mean, yeah, we life's pretty good, especially if you're a cowboy, yeah. You know.
I've thought about that a lot here over the last year or so. It's just like I get so tired of people talking about how there's no good hands anymore, and the people that are bitching about it, not all the time, but I've more times than I can count, I've heard guys talking about how there's no good hands anymore, and then you look at their kids and their kids have no interest in it. Their dads have no interest in teaching it to them. And you're like, well, okay, that's a missed opportunity for a good hand right there. And then you're like, you know, I don't want to be the old man's just bitching about how the young kids ain't worth shit anymore without even trying to do my part to make sure they're not shitty, you know? And if you're just a fat, lazy asshole that just talk shit on everybody, like, you're nothing to look up to either. Like, you got to give the younger generation something to look up to. And I ain't much to look at, but I'm gonna give him my best to be the role model. Like, I didn't, you know, there's a good chunk of my childhood I didn't have a life was pretty uncertain where I was gonna end up, and I didn't have a great male role model. And once I found that, you know, I got that. That was it. It's a life changer. You know, like, it, and a lot of that, I hated my male role models during that period because they've worked my ass off. You know, but it instills work ethic. It instills that, you know, there's another Jocko thing or a military thing in general. Just embrace the suck. Yeah, it's gonna suck. Accept that from the get go, and then go do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I grew up in town, man. I didn't know my ass from a hole in the ground. And I got super lucky when I started out. I took ass chewings that would have made most fucking kids cry. Like, I told Darren Little this the other day, like, I took ass chewings. Like, if someone would have done that on a corporate ranch today, they would have got sent to HR and fired. Mm. Like, and it was just part of it. But luckily, there was those guys. There was some guys that were willing to look at me and say, that dumb little son of a bitch, you know, like, we got to help this kid or he's going to get killed. And there was, like, I mean, I had a couple of them starting out, and one of them would have been like Charlie Fortune. I worked for him for a while, and good guy. And he had a way of telling you you were doing stupid shit without ever really saying it or making you feel dumb. Mm-hmm. And then, like, maybe 2 days later, you'd be like, oh, but there was, you know, half a dozen guys that were willing to take me under their wing and show me stuff and everything. And I don't think that there's enough of that out there. Like, it's pretty easy if you go to a rope and like a, you know, a ranch open or ranch roadie or something, and there's a kid that's struggling, it's pretty easy for guys to say, oh, look at that dumb sucker, he's going to die out there. But the guys, and it was actually Charlie Fortune that told me one time, he said, anybody can learn something from a good hand, but it takes a good hand to learn something from a bad hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, if and most of the guys that I look up to would be the guys that would be over there in the corner, not doing it in front of people and making a kid look bad or nothing. But hey, man, you know, if you do this or that, or you hold your rope this way, or, you know, whatever, set your horse up this way, pick his rib up, do whatever. And maybe just, it works for me, but, you know, I don't know, maybe it won't work for you.
Yeah.
Those are the guys that I look up to, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I've learned over the years too, like, different way. My one of my favorite sayings, I don't remember who told me, he's like, I'm not going to tell you how to do it, but here's how I do it. And it's a great piece of advice. Like, if you don't know how to start with somebody, like, that's a great way to start. Like, I'm not going to tell you how to do this job, but here's how I'm going to do it today. This is what I'm going to do. Here's my process, blah, 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 whatever. And, it's always great to end it with that. Like, it may not work for you, but this is how I do it. It works all right for me. And,
Hey man, I'm not trying to tell you what to do or get in your business, but, and that's when you better freaking listen because you're doing something stupid, you know?
But it's always those guys that are willing to help. They're also, you know, like willing to help you out. They're also, because I've been on the, you know, I've been there with them as it's either right before you trot off to go help them or you run towards the wreck to get them untangled and you go, well, I guess they ain't got any quit in them, do they? Then you're in a rush to go get them untangled or whatever the hell, but it's that's usually like, all right, I kind of like this kid. That's usually the moment when there's like, well,
yeah, I think it
he ain't got any quit. I think we better really go help him before he ends up in pieces.
For sure. Yeah, it just boils down to just being freaking gritty, man. That's all you really need in life is just, like you said, don't have no freaking quit and you'll be successful. Whatever successful is in your mind, you know, man.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it's a good note to end on is, you know, it's like, you know, like wrestling, cowboying, military, all like the hard stuff, linemen, oil field shit, even though like those factory laborers, you know, like, fuck that. I worked in a meat packing plant for a summer, and I only lasted the summer because I knew I was going back to school when summer was done, you know? Otherwise, I would have quit after the third day. You know, like, I found out real quick that wasn't for me. But, in wrestling, that's the worst sport to lose in because you're just getting mushed by another dude's body. You know, and it just sucks. There's nothing about it that's pleasant. It just sucks all the way around. So the only way for it to not suck is for you to be better and in the other position. Like that's the only way it doesn't suck. So you have to get better.
Yeah.
And like riding nasty horses, you better figure out what you're doing there, or it's just gonna continue to suck really bad, and it's gonna hurt. And it's what I love about the profession is like you get exposed real quick for your talent is exposed real quick. And it might take a while for it to get exposed. Yeah, like a guy can float by for a while, but like when you're exposed, your skill gets exposed quickly. And whether you have skill or not, it gets exposed in just like that. And how you react to a certain situation everybody in the crew will know. Oh, okay, he's either a puke or and talking out his ass, or oh yeah, he can cow a little bit, can he? And that's kind of the beauty of the profession, because it's kind of all or nothing. And the only way for it to not suck is to get better. Like, just be better at it, and then it won't suck as bad.
I think, I don't remember where I heard this or read this or somewhere one time, but I think I'd read it somewhere. And I can't remember if it said a day or a week, but there was a guy that had said, if you want me to tell you about a man, you let me be on the wagon with him for, I think he said a day. And I'll tell you everything I need to know about that guy.
Yeah.
And that's exactly right. Yeah, I mean, how you handle your cattle and treat your horses, and like if you're holding up, and don't matter if you're holding the cut or whatever outside, like holding a deer or something, like the way that guy rides to the cattle, just everything. It all boils down to you can bullshit all you want and talk about all you want in the bar spur and your bar stool, but just come hang out with us for a week and we'll know.
Yeah, and it most of the time it won't even take that long to figure out. Like I said,
no, no.
It may take a little bit for that moment to occur when your skills get exposed, but they do, and it happens quick when it does. So, that being said, I hope I'm still Boots O'Neill at 90 something years old, still swinging my leg over a horse when I want to. But it sure is a fun job. I do enjoy it. It ain't for everybody, but man, it's a lot of fun.
No, yeah, I wouldn't trade it for nothing. I really want it.
I'd trade my current position for some pretty sweet outside gigs if they paid better, but that's one thing about the feedlot, is that paycheck doesn't bounce, it's steady and it clears every time, and it's usually pretty decent. So
yeah that's helpful, especially if you have kids. I guess I don't know, they say that money's important. I don't know why. A bunch of pussies.
If I didn't need it to buy stuff, I really wouldn't care about money at all, you know. if I didn't have to use it to do shit, I've got no use for money. I don't care about I want enough of it to where I don't have to worry about bills and shit again. If I can just go do what I want, then I'm good. But until then, I guess I got to worry about money a little bit.
Yeah, I guess that's just the human condition, whether you like it
or
not.
So, but I guess the best thing you can do is to make sure you can do as much of your living as you can without needing money. You know, like make your own shit.
Yeah. And, for sure. But yeah, there's a kid that come and worked for me one time, and he was like 18 years old. I really liked the kid. He's freaking handy. Always show up early for work, freaking ride bronc down to rope anything. Like, he didn't give a shit, you know, handled cattle goods, but like string cattle outside. He's a good guy. And he told me one time, the 18 year old kid, when he told me that, I thought, man, that's cool as shit. He said, I have a goal that one day that I can make every piece of gear that I ride. Like, you know, he can start his colt, build a saddle, build spurs, bits, like leggings, everything. And I thought, yeah, that's pretty freaking cool. And that's pretty cowboy. Yeah. Like, if you can actually go, you know, build your saddle and your leggings and your bit and your spurs and freaking every, and I think if I remember right, the guy was even talking about wanting to learn how to make hats one day. And I'm like, dude, that's a cool goal to have. And I like them kind of guys, you know. Just freaking tear into it and we'll screw it up and figure out how to fix it. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. I don't have quite that mindset. I'm more of a, how did we get to here? You know, like my research takes me down different rabbit holes, but I love the tax stuff, but I like using it. You know, they could explain to me exactly how it's made and I'll be interested, but when I'm done, I'll be like, all right, now I'm going to see how it works on a horse, you know?
Well, my cousin the other day, he kept telling me, he's like, I'm just waiting for the day that you start building saddles. And same kind of deal. Like, man, I like freaking strapping them on colts and roping shit out of them, but I don't really have any desire to build them.
I know.
You know, I'm the same way.
The way guys will ask me about the cattle market, too, and I'm just like, I don't know, man. I just take care of them.
Yeah.
I take care of them. I don't sell them. I don't own them. I've done a little better job of following it here lately, but it's only because people keep asking me about it. So I'm like, well, I guess I could at least read the market report on a news show every week. And that's the least I could do to stay up to date on this industry that I work in. You know, it seems like I might ought to know a little bit about it.
We cracked out a few years ago in the cattle deal, and this same kind of deal. Like, after I had my first set of cows, I was like, I should probably learn a little bit about how to market cattle and what these freaking things are worth.
Yeah.
You know? Right. Like, I've been on an uphill battle for 3 years trying to, I don't know, learn how to do manager shit, but I really just like roping.
I know, that's, yeah, that, That's why I like the gig I'm at now, where I can I have just enough responsibility to get me a better paycheck, not enough to make my life miserable. And
you bet.
And yeah. I got one guy on my crew, so if I keep him happy, my life is pretty easy. So
yeah, that's helpful. Simplicity is sometimes worth a lot.
It really is. It really is. Well, TC, we've been at it for 2 hours and 15 minutes now. So
wow.
This has been fun, man. I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed your episode with Darren. I'm looking forward to seeing what you do. If you need any help or anything, got questions, let me know. And maybe one of these days you'll have me on yours.
Yeah, I'll do that for sure. I need to figure out how to run the old phone deal a little better, but I'm real into it. So.
Well,
yeah, I appreciate you having
me. Yeah, of course. Computer will help a bunch. Get you a decent computer and you'll it'll make your life easier on the recording end, especially if you can't record in person. Like it's I can send you a few things on how to, especially like if on some of these older guys, I've found out like if you call them, they're more than willing to do a podcast if they could just sit there on their phone and talk to you. And if once you figure out how to get that recorded, then it's, you know, then game on. I've had a lot of,
yeah, I've got some cool guys in mind for just that. But like the one buddy, I talk to him all the time. You can tell he's on speakerphone, and then you can hear his speaker run up and down his coat the whole time. You're like, hey man, move that thing closer to your, I can't hear you, you know? And I'm like, man, if I can just teach that guy how to talk on the phone, I'll have some gold, you know?
Get him a pair of earbuds and then you're golden. I know they look stupid having one of those damn earbuds hanging out of your ear, but it is so damn handy.
Really?
Yeah. Like I don't hold my phone to talk anymore. I just talk on my earbuds, and it's handy.
Well, I dropped my phone in a beer cooler up there at a buddy's, Brandon, two freaking summers ago, so I my earpiece doesn't even work anymore, so I just put my phone on speaker and drop it in my pocket. So there's a 50-50 chance on whether you can even hear me if you talk on the phone with me.
Yeah, I know how that goes. Mine's still usable, but it's got cracks. Got a couple big cracks across the screen. So, but goddamn, these things cost so much anymore. You gotta squeeze every bit of life out of them you can.
Yeah, that ain't no lie.
Well, TC, I sure appreciate your time, man. It was a good one, and I'll probably put this out either Monday or Wednesday. I don't know for sure, but I'll make sure and tag you in it on Facebook, and make sure you go check out his show. It's called The Remnants. I listen to it on Spotify. Are you on all the platforms now, or are you just...
I'm currently only on Spotify till I learn the technology part a little better.
Well, so. Spotify is where I listen, and it's... I think it's the best one there. You got music and podcast all in one spot. So it's a good one. Go check it out, The Remnants. And thanks everybody for tuning in. Now move your ass. We're back.
We don't ride out in the morning singing like Roar Jean. The cows we punch are snorty and the Bronx are just plumb mean. And ain't nobody out here trying to be a hero. Fixing fence or feeding cows when it's 10 below zero. And if you want to make a hand, cause you'll bleed and you'll sweat. Stay hard. like the Marlboro Man. We look out to the horizon and the cattle that's on this land. We pack our ropes on ready. No, they ain't no souvenir. There ain't no arena stopwatch and there ain't no crowd that cheers. And if you want to make a hand, because you'll bleed and you'll sweat. Stay hard on the trail of what you're hoping to find way out here in the new West. When the colts that you started and laid down to sleep no longer burdened with old age, that saddle you rides war slick, trodden them long, long circles, it'll mark passing of your days. It'll show you made a hand, that you gave away your best. And that you chose to ride way out here in the new world.